Now the topic is Fraternity of Adepts. The question that we are dealing when we consider this topic is, in reality, where should humanity look for hope? Is there hope for humanity at all? If we look at the dire condition of the world today, with its moral tsunamis, mental disturbances, both of physical catastrophes, what is the way that humanity should choose for a better future? Where should we look for hope and guidance so that we as a human race, a brotherhood of human souls, can correct our course and reach permanent peace, happiness, and establish heaven on earth? Where do we look for? That is the actual question. Philanthropists who, with deep compassion towards the suffering fellow men, especially those who are less fortunate and downtrodden, when they work with various societies, organizations, as well as individually, after a period of time, you find a sort of dejection in them. You find a sort of hopelessness, helplessness. Because the condition of human mind, human heart, and the various complex situation in which we are all involved in makes bettering of human condition almost hopeless. So many, many philanthropists after a long time feel this hopelessness. Nevertheless, there is a great comfort when we remember that there have been humanities prior to ours. We as a human family who are inhabiting the earth, not as bodies, but as souls who take up bodies again and again. We are not the first stream of life which has entered this universe, this world, and we are not the first to go through the human condition. Neither will we be the last of the human stream to go through the human condition. There have been humanities prior to ours who have gone through same things that we have gone through, even worse than what we are going through. And the cream of that society, of those humanities, the sages of those humanities, the human beings like me and you, but those who have chosen the right path, who have struggled, who have gone through long suffering, trials, tribulations, and purified themselves, and learned all the lessons that nature has to teach the human soul, and realized that each human soul is nothing but a reflection of the Supreme itself. So there have been souls who have gone through before us and who have perfected themselves and who understand what we are going through and who can guide us in our current situation. There is a great comfort in this idea, and intuitively every civilization, every culture, religion speaks of wise men of the past, because this idea is deeply imprinted in our very soul, because as souls we have seen it, experienced these truths, and been with great sages of the past in prior bodies. So every civilization and culture records the existence of elder brothers of humanity, masters of wisdom. You may call them rishis, hierophants, or the wise men of the East. Innumerable names, but all referring to the same body, the same brotherhood, the same fraternity of high, exalted and perfected beings. We are all like child souls. This whole human race is like a child soul growing up. And they are our parents who have gone through the stages that we have gone through and who help us in our growth. So, this body of adepts, who in ancient India were called rishis, but who are not confined to India, even the India of the past, they were there in all races, all nations, all climates, all times. They have completely overcome selfishness and acquired power and knowledge which is unimaginable to us from our present standpoint. It is they who guard humanity, like parents guard young children and infants. It is they who look after the human family like parents do. These adepts and teachers are like a great tree of knowledge, like a great banyan tree. And whether it is Buddha, Shankara, Jesus, Muhammad, Guru Nanak, Confucius, Plato, or any other great teacher whom you take, they all are but branches, twigs, leaves, fruits, flowers of this one great tree of knowledge. What they say is that you can also reach the pinnacle of perfection that they have reached. There is a Buddha within you, there is a Christ within you, say Muhammad within you. In fact, they say that you are here in this body for that very purpose, to recognize your divinity and to express the powers of your divine self. Where do we find these teachers? Now, the problem with the world is the teachers come to unite, whereas their followers will only divide. All teachers teach the same doctrine, teach the same virtues and ethics. It is the overzealous, ignorant, selfish human minds which attach themselves to these teachings as barnacles to a ship and suck the life out of the teachings of the great masters, make it into a religion, a sect, a subsect, and create dissensions, differences, and destruction. But the path to the masters of wisdom is always open. Where do we find them? When the Theosophical Society was launched in 1875, and the world began to hear openly after long centuries of silence about the existence of masters in all nations, all races and religions. Then many members of the Theosophical Society began to ask, what is the postal address of the Masters of Wisdom? We want to write them letters. We want to communicate with them. We want to go and meet them. What is the postal address? It is like us asking here, what is the lat long which we can put on Google Maps to reach the great rishis of ancient India? It is as foolish as that. There is no Google map that can reach, which we can use to navigate to reach the Masters of Wisdom. They always remain secret, this body of adepts, masters, they always remain secret for various reasons. If they come out in open and display their powers and knowledge and the perfection that they have reached, either of the two things will happen. One section will worship them as gods. The other section of humanity will hunt them down as devils. And ultimately, their purpose will be defeated. The purpose of the masters will be defeated because such a display of power, their control over forces of nature and what we would call as miraculous powers, would only make them mere objects of worship, which is not what they want. On the other hand, if we cunning human minds degenerate, unregenerated human minds get to know about their work in detail, because of our selfishness, we wouldn't even care to, we wouldn't mind interfering with their work. They do not look for fame, and there is no need for them to come in person to show humanity the right path. What is the proof of existence of these great masters of wisdom? You, me, every human soul is the very proof. You are the very proof of the existence of masters of wisdom. Your very ability to know, to reflect, to make moral choices, to grow, that very power which is there within us is a proof that there have been other beings who were just like us, mortal, sinning, erring, but who have made the right choices consistently and who have reached self-knowledge and perfection. So our very existence is a proof of existence of this fraternity of adepts. When the master's existence was mentioned and their powers, a portion of their powers was displayed and spoken about, this was in 1870s, 1880s, some people asked, if the great rishis and mahatmas exist, and they're full of compassion for the world, why don't they solve world hunger, for example? So Mr. Judge made some observations about this question, and he responded to it in this manner. He asked, we Western nations demand that the adept should multiply food and feed everyone. But what is the basic problem here? Is it hunger, world hunger, because there is shortage of food? Or is it because the greedy have kept the majority of the food to themselves and there is a systemic injustice? Which of the two? Is there less food, or is it that we are greedy and not sharing with our brothers? There is enough food to feed everyone, but we don't do it. That is the problem. And if an adept were to multiply food in this manner, what would we do? We would class him as a criminal and imprison him. And the food that he so generated, multiplied, for the sake of poor and needy, would also be grabbed by the rich and the powerful and hoarded. And he gives the example of Berlin in 1892, when starving people with no other option took bread from the shops and they were punished for theft. So it is very difficult for a master of wisdom to help humanity, because the fundamental problem is humans create a great obstacle, wall, a karmic wall, which will prevent the masters from helping us. They are ever ready to help us, but we create such karmic causes that it is almost impossible for them to render help to us. So humanity can only be helped by them by what they say as alteration of certain minor currents, minor karmic currents. What they do therefore is, they teach us what are the karmic causes which will lead to bondage, what are the karmic causes which will lead to suffering and sorrow, and what is right knowledge which will lead to collective happiness, peace and prosperity. Like we read in The Voice of the Silence, teach to eschew all causes, but the ripple of effects as a great tidal wave thou shalt let run its course. That's one idea to consider. The other thing is, are these masters, rishis, the body that we see? You know, we speak about rishis and the first thing that comes to mind is long beard and matted hair and all that. Are the rishis the bodies that we see, feel and hear? So, there was a great saint who defined a guru as gunatita and rupavarchita. That's a very good definition of who a true teacher is, who a true master of wisdom is. Guru, gunatita, rupavarchita. That is, a teacher is one who has transcended the three qualities and who is formless. The teacher can only be found within oneself, not by looking for them outside in Himalayas, in ashrams, or in monasteries, or any such outside place. They are to be found only within the deep, within the depth of our consciousness. When we are able to reach there within ourselves, we will find that the teacher is already there. And how do we do that? How do we reach the very depths of our being where the masters are and where they are constantly working for the welfare of humanity? It is only through their philosophy and their work. Devotion to their philosophy, dedication to their cause, dedication to their work. And philosophy and the work are not two separate things. They are two aspects. Now, coming to their work and their function in the scheme of cosmic evolution, there is not much that we can understand about their work, because they work at a cosmic plane as well as they work at the human realm. Just as an infant or a small child cannot understand all the work that its parents do in order to cater for the child's need, going to office, traveling, catching the bus, you know, dealing with office people, so many things, buying groceries, so many things. But what does the child understand? Infant's capacity to understand is not much. Similarly, we as budding human souls cannot understand all the functions of this fraternity of brotherhood. Nevertheless, there are a few important things that we must remember about them. First is, they are incessantly working for the spiritual progress of humanity. We speak of philanthropy, right? Doing good to others, charity. They say, yes, philanthropy, feeding the body, sheltering the body, clothing it, all that is good. But do you know the basic cause of human sorrow, suffering and crime? It is deep within human heart. And anyone who works to remove the causes of evil within the human heart has bestowed upon humanity a great boon. So they work on the plane of causes, not merely on the plane of effects. Why can't they liberate everyone? Because they have such great powers. They cannot liberate anyone. And this is a mistaken notion that especially in India is there, that the guru will grant liberation to the disciple. Greatly mistaken notion. They cannot, because each human soul has to evolve through experience. As Shankara says in Viveka Chudamani, if I have illness and fever, my father or mother taking medicine will not cure me of the disease. Similarly, if I am stuck with the fever and the disease of ignorance, nobody can help except myself. But what they do is, they constantly present to human mind great truths about nature. Were it not for them saving, guarding and keeping the record of the great truths of nature, it would be impossible for a single person in this whole world to spiritually progress. True spiritual progress comes through knowledge of truth. And these masters of wisdom, the fraternity of adepts, are the guardians of these truths of nature, truths of man. Through every age, through all the turmoils of the world, through all the wars and famines and innumerable disturbances, they maintain the knowledge, wisdom of man and nature. Because this philosophy is the only thing which will save mankind. So they guard it preciously, and at the right time, when the cyclic opportunity comes, when the karma of the humanity is such that help can be afforded to them in that particular manner, they send out their messengers. they send out their disciples, they send out their students, and give them the mission to give out to the world a portion of this occult, hidden Gupta Vidya. So they come as various teachers. Like we said, it may be Jesus, it may be Shankara, it may be Plato. They come out at different times to different nations, and the same truths they clothe in the way that that particular civilization can understand. They put it in the language that is current at that time, and they explain it in a manner which is necessary for the human evolution, which is in that stage of progress. So they do that incessantly. Not only do they do that, they keep a watch overall on the progress of humanity. They look at the inner plane of causes, on the mental, moral, inner plane, and see in what direction humanity is progressing. If there are souls which show signs of promise to help humanity in its spiritual progress, such souls come to the notice of these masters, and help is given to them, knowledge is given to them, unknown to them, unknown to that very soul who is the recipient, and certain great personages whose life and action have an impact on the course of nations, in the destiny of nations, they influence such men and women for the betterment of humanity. George Washington is one example. Thomas Paine, great example. It is said that certain great kings of India were disciples of the masters of wisdom. So they would guide the kings in their performance of duty towards their kingdom for the welfare of humanity, for the welfare of all, for the sake of justice. So they keep a close watch on the progress of humanity. Now science is making so many discoveries. Not every discovery of science will be for the benefit of humanity. Today we think progress is unraveling the mystery of nature, unraveling the hidden facts of nature. Whereas for the ancients, for the sages, true progress is moral, guiding the mental progress. Today it is merely mental. Through that physical luxury, physical security, and physical pleasures. But for the masters of wisdom, true progress is moral. And unless the moral and the ethical guide your discoveries, inventions, technologies, and so on, such a civilization will only rend itself apart. Such civilization will only lead to calamity, destruction, injustice, violence, and the discoveries made by a civilization which is unethical, immoral, can only lead to its own destruction. So the masters constantly work for human welfare from its highest standpoint. They could have helped science in discovering tremendous, unimaginable, fantastic powers within man and in nature. But science is, we materialistic present day science. Of course, many things are changing, but overall mainstream is materialistic and not philanthropic. Individual scientists may be philanthropic, but science as a human endeavor does not have philanthropy and human good and welfare as the aim. Instead, it has merely discovery of nature as its aim. And therefore, one of the masters wrote about modern science and he said this, I quote, "Exact experimental science has nothing to do with morality, virtue, philanthropy. Therefore, can make no claim upon our help unless it blends itself with metaphysics. Education enthrones skepticism but imprisons spirituality." Unquote. And then he goes on to say, you can help your nation best by providing a secure basis for ethical living, a secure basis for right living. Then you would have conferred a great boon upon your nation. So the most important work that this fraternity is involved in, that we can understand, is in the relation to our evolution, soul evolution. As Mr. Jett says somewhere, what is needed is the ministering to the needs of the inner man. The needs of the inner man, the thinking entity, he has to be guided. Philanthropy is not about mere sheltering, clothing and food. He speaks of a certain higher philanthropy and he says, a spreading among men of a right basis for ethics, for thought, for action. This spread of the right knowledge is true philanthropy. So another point that we have to do, that we have to understand regarding this fraternity of adepts is this. In the course of human evolution, there are two choices which open up. One is, you work for your individual salvation, individual mukti, moksha, nirvana. That is, you practice purification, ethical living, and acquire knowledge so that you can liberate yourself from sorrow and the cycles of birth and death. That is one path. But that is not the only path, and that is not the path which is prescribed by masters. There is a second path, the secret path, which the masters have chosen, which the great rishis of India have chosen. That secret path is, through great trials and suffering, you acquire all that has to be, that can be acquired, and reach the very threshold of nirvana, but you renounce nirvana itself and work for the welfare of humanity with all the immense knowledge and power that you have acquired. You sacrifice all that for the sake of, for the welfare of humanity. There is a short story of, allegorical story of desert wanderers. So the story goes that a huge desert is there and many people are all wandering in the desert, thirsty, hot sun, painful condition, and they have all heard of a certain fortified palace around an oasis in the middle of the desert somewhere. And if you reach that palace, which has an oasis, plenty of food, all comfort, shelter, then you have nothing to worry about throughout your life. So everyone is searching for that and wandering about in the desert. There are many of them who, through strong search, find this palace, climb the fortified wall, look into the pleasures, and jump to the other side and enjoy it. They have nothing to worry about the condition of the other wanderers in the desert. They don't worry about it. They have done the search. They have acquired it. Though they are going to enjoy it. This is the path of self-liberation. Moksha for individual self. Now there is another choice where through the same strong search you reach, you climb the fortified wall, but sitting on the wall, you look back and see that there are innumerable brothers and sisters of yours who are still suffering in humanity, in the desert, wandering. And if you jump to the other side and enjoy, what will happen to them? So I can't do that. So he comes back and goes in search of the wandering souls and points them in the right direction so that they may go and enjoy the comfort and benefit while he still searches for other souls and helps them. So the people whom, the wanderers whom he helps, he tells them, now this is the way to reach the palace. After you reach it, don't go and jump inside and enjoy for your own selfish bliss. Enjoy your own selfish bliss. Rather, after having found the way, come back and find others like I am doing. Now that is the secret path. That's the path that all the great teachers who come to us as Buddha and others, the great rishis, that is the path that they show. That path is twofold. If we have to reach from our house to anywhere, we have to walk across, right? To walk, we need 2 feet, the left leg and the right leg. Similarly, to reach the masters, the 2 legs that are needed are P and P, philosophy and philanthropy. P and P. Their philosophy is the one which will open up our minds to our own greatness. They don't require our worship. They are showing us the path to recognize our own divinity and our own inseparableness, our own brotherhood, the ties of brotherhood with other beings. So their philosophy leads to true philanthropy. And their philanthropy is nothing but their teachings. It will lead to true philanthropy. We think we need something practical, some meditation, some technique, you know, some practice. But philosophy is the most practical of all things. The error in thinking that we have is we don't know how mind works. Take this example. If the eyes have to see the object before you, if you place a distorted glass or a cardboard paper in front, between your eyes and the object, can you see it? You cannot. The same thing with the mind also. Unless the mind is able to purify, clarify, and work along the right lines, no matter what practice, what you do, it will all be useless and harmful. So the mind needs to perceive truth, and for that guidance, philosophy is needed. And the masters of wisdom constantly bring out and present this philosophy, the great philosophy of brotherhood of mankind, to every nation at all times. So they are teaching this, you are divine, and your progress can only happen through brotherhood, through moral growth. If brotherhood is not realized by us, and we don't become brothers and sisters and help one another, if we don't form a fraternity of human souls here on this earth by study of their philosophy and practice of philanthropy, all other progress is useless. They say that we have seen civilization after civilization over millennium growing, reaching the pinnacle, but perishing just like torches thrown into the sea, they perish. Why? Because the grand truths of nature is not made the basis of civilization. So they say we need workers for humanity. They are calling forth, we need workers and helpers in this cause of human perfection. Are you ready for it? Do you have the strength to be unselfish? Transform yourself for the sake of the welfare of others. Can you do it? Then the path is open for you. But if you seek knowledge for your own self, for your own satisfaction, for your own spiritual progress, then you have chosen a different path which will not lead to masters of wisdom. So it is their philosophy and philanthropy, P&P. That is that we have to understand and practice. There is a story, allegorical story, and after recounting which we will stop and consider any questions or any comments or observations. The story is recounted by Mr. Judge in his article. Yeah, it is called an allegory. Now here, the master is conversing with the disciple, and the disciple is asking the teacher, "Master, help me to enlighten the world. Allow me to help you in your work, and let us pour light into the world such that all souls will benefit by it." The master look upon the student sadly, and he says, "There are already many to teach intellectual conceptions of truth. Do you think you will serve humanity best by adding yourself to their number?" The student is perplexed. He says, "Ought we not to proclaim the truth from the very housetops until the whole world shall have heard?" The master says, "Okay, you do that, and then what happens?" The disciple says, "Then the whole world will accept truth." The master says, "No, because the truth is not of the intellect, but of the heart." And then he gives the disciple the vision to look into the condition of the world. And the condition of the world is something peculiar. The pupil sees, by the vision that the master grants him, that the truth is like a white light which is flooding the whole earth. Truth is there everywhere, every nation, all times. But not even a single ray of truth is reaching the living plants which sorely need this light. Why? Because there are dense layers of clouds which intervene and obstruct the light of truth from reaching the plants. And the teacher says, the clouds which intervene are the human intellect. And the master gives further insight and shows that here and there, this part and that part of the world, there are small rift that is made, small openings that are made in these clouds, and the light is able to reach to the earth and nourish the living plants. And the disciple looks and finds that the rift in this cloud is caused by the vibration of the human heart. And the teacher says, as a moral of the story, that only by abiding to and enlarging the rift will the light ever reach the earth. Will you pour more light upon the clouds, or will you establish a vortex of heart force? So make yourself a heart center of pure impersonal force for welfare of humanity. Then the truth which is already there in the world will benefit the mankind. We may here recollect an incident from the life of Sri Guru Nanak Dev during one of his Udasi's travels to Kashmir, followed by Manas Sarovar, Himalayas. He comes across certain Siddhas who are on the top of the mountain and engaged in penance, meditation, and so on. So they ask Guru Nanak, what is happening in the world of the mortals below? What is the condition of the world? And Guru Nanak Dev takes this opportunity to give out the true teachings about what is true religion, what is the responsibility of those who have knowledge. And it is very relevant to the condition of our country today. So let's consider the response of Sri Guru Nanak Dev. He says, in response to the question raised by the Siddhas, he says, well, friends, the condition is hard, very hard indeed. Sin and falsehood, tyranny and oppression, lust and greed, wars and pestilence prevail everywhere and disfigure the land. The world is engulfed in darkness, deep and thick. It is impossible to discover truth and righteousness there in these days, as it is to see the bright moon on the moonless night. India has lost this moon of truth and righteousness. I have girded up my loins in search of this lost treasure, but vain, yes, utterly vain appears to be my search. You ask, what is the state of things in the world of mortals? Have you a thought to spare for your unfortunate motherland? I may tell you that she is in the grip of sin, evil, and darkest woes, and is crying aloud in agony. But in this doleful song that rises from the breast of an afflicted humanity, you discover a music which lulls you to slumber. There is none in the land who could remedy this sorry state of things. How could it be otherwise? Those who could have done so have fled from their duties. Persons like you, who are the cream of Hindu society, have concealed themselves in the fastness of the lofty mountains. You have deserted the poor people to their miserable lot. You, who ought to have been their leaders in this age of sin, slavery, and darkness, propped on your beds of ferns and flowers beside this lake of nectar in mountains, you take the inebriated cup and live and lie reclined together like gods, careless of mankind. To speak the truth, you add to the misery of the afflicted people on whom you live
as parasites. You neglect your duty towards man, God, and your own higher selves. True religion should teach you to work, pray, and adore. It should teach you to be true sons of your motherland. Devoid of true worship, which consists in honoring and loving the Father, negligent of your duty to your neighbors, which consists in lovingly helping them onward in the path of progress towards the blissful home of the Father, and unmindful of your duty to your very selves, which consists in a healthy, all-round development, right use of body, mind, and spirit. You rub ashes on your bodies and sit here, lost in vain, drunken contemplation. You have ceased to be men of religion, for religion does not consist in trying to save one's own self by virtue of creed and seclusion, but in trying to save others by virtue of life lived in the world." Unquote. This response by Guru Nanak Dev gives the true perspective of the ancient rishis who are still here in this world working incessantly for the upliftment of humanity, moral and spiritual upliftment, which alone can lead to true material progress, peace and happiness. So let us bear this response in mind, work upon it, and bring about a change in oneself for the sake of the welfare of humanity, so that truth and righteousness can again shine in this country of ours. Thank you very much.